It's hard to read the news these days without asking yourself, how did we get here? Fiasco is a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which resulted in a high-stakes stalemate, ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Things got a little spicy on Capitol Hill today with Tony Bobulinski. We'll talk about that tonight. Julie Kelly is here to update us on some things, lawfare in America. We have a packed show tonight, and I'm right. You ever laugh about how bad things are? I do. And I don't know whether that's how I was raised. Maybe it's a Marine Corps thing. But you ever take a step back and kind of analyze where we are politically and culturally and just kind of snicker to yourself? I was thinking about this today because Tony Bobulinski, Biden's former business partner, he testified on the Hill today. We're going to play all the video for you in a second, and it's great and whatnot. But as I was watching the Bobulinski testimony and we're finding out just how bad things are, I was considering this. So we have a president of the United States of America. That's a really important post, right? You could argue that's the most important job in the world, maybe. It could be the most important job in the world. So the man with the most important job in the world, not only does he have a non-functional brain, remember, Joe Biden's brain is just melting before our eyes, so he has a non-functional brain. All the power in his administration has been handed to a bunch of Marxists who are trying to burn America down. Okay, so you have that. You have the dementia. You have the communist part. And then, on top of those two things, he's a criminal. The president of the United States of America. All the evidence by this point in time points to the fact that Joe Biden has used the entirety of his political career to essentially commit crimes. It's a crime. It is a crime, no matter what anyone else tells you, to use your political office to financially benefit yourself, close family members, or whatnot. That is a criminal act. It is a crime. And Joe Biden, it's not like he did this once. It's not as if we came across a text message Joe sent to Ukraine. Hey, could you give Hunter a job for a couple months? He's kind of a dirtball. You know, that would be bad, and that would be criminal. But a father helping out a son every now and then, okay, I think everyone would kind of get it. All right, he ended it. But it's not like a one-time thing. Joe Biden used his political office, apparently for the entirety of his career, to financially benefit himself and his family. So the president has dementia, is a communist, and is a criminal. That's where we currently sit here in the United States of America. Now let's get to the actual Tony Bobulinski testimony from today. It was awesome. It was spicy. And remember, part of the reason it's spicy. Have you ever known a friend that's gone through a divorce, or maybe you yourself have gone through a divorce? They're generally really nasty, aren't they? Involves a lot of crying, yelling, anger, misery. Why, though? Why? Well, nobody can hurt you like the ones you love. Nobody can hurt you like the ones you love. Nobody. That's why divorce proceedings are so damaging, because you used to be together. Therefore, they know so much about you. They know who you are. They know what you are. They know your little things. Tony Bobulinski used to work hand in hand with the Biden family. He knows all the ins. He knows all the outs. Tony Bobulinski felt abandoned by the Biden family. And so Tony Bobulinski is spilling all the tea. And it was a spicy day. Practically right off the bat, it comes out just both barrels on Hunter Biden.
Now recognize Mr. Bobulinski for his opening statement.
Should I allow Hunter to give his opening statement first?
We'll Doesn't appear Mr. Biden showed up for his public hearing, so we'll recognize you, Mr. Bobulinski.
Okay. He didn't. You know, normally when people sit in front of Congress, it doesn't matter who they are, they try to do the, hey, I'm just going to do the by the book thing, and they kind of speak in all this lawyer talk and just kind of try to get through the thing and get out of it. No. It was obvious right off the bat that Tony Bobulinski was there, and he wanted to walk away with some scalps today. And I do want to point out before we go further that that's James Comer, head of the Oversight Committee. And I'm glad they had this testimony today. It is beneficial for the American people to find out just how much of a criminal their president is. I'm glad all that stuff happened, so on and so forth. But it also should be noted that one of the reasons Joe Biden will not be impeached in the House is because we don't have enough members, and we don't have enough members because James Comer is one of the Republicans who voted to bounce George Santos out of Congress. So do keep that little bit, at least in the back of your mind, as we go through all the rest of this today. Now, let's go to some of the meaty stuff. Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden committed perjury, according to Tony Bobulinski.
Biden gave his transcribed interview on February 28th and lied throughout his testimony. Here's just one egregious example of Hunter's perjury. He lied to the committee on important details concerning his money demands and threats to CFC in text messages on July 30th and 31st, 2017. He leveraged his father's presence next to him in that infamous text to strong-arm CFC to paying Hunter immediately. Jim Biden also lied extensively throughout his transcribed interview on February 21st and perjured himself. An example of that, on page 100 of his transcript, Jim is asked specifically, do you recall having a meeting with Hunter Biden, Tony Bobulinski, and Joe Biden? Jim's response, absolutely not. After the committee showed him text messages confirming that I met with Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Jim Biden at the Beverly Hilton in May 2017, Jim Biden, with a former U.S. attorney lawyer sitting next to him, still denied that meeting took place. Hunter confirmed his uncle perjured himself in front of this committee.
Bidens are liars. Bidens are criminals. The entire family was in on it and has been in on it for a long time. And let's talk about this family thing for a moment. Remember, we've talked about this so many times on the show that you know it by now. Joe Biden was essentially groomed from an early age to go into politics. And immediately upon entering politics, Joe Biden began to enrich himself using his family. It's his brother's business. It's his son's business. It's this, it's that. That's how criminals always operate. That's how the American mafia operates. The mafia don doesn't buy the local Italian pizza joint. His second cousin's brother buys the local Italian pizza joint. And that leads me to another thing, just a quick item, and then we're going to move on to more Tony Bobulinski testimony here. Republicans. I saw another Republican organization say something today about Joe being involved in Hunter's foreign business deals. Involved in Hunter's business. Republicans, please, please for once, get the messaging right. I'm begging you, for the first time ever, please get the messaging right. Hunter Biden doesn't have a business. Hunter doesn't have anything to sell. He's a 50-some-year-old drug and hooker addict. Hunter Biden has no value, no power, nothing to sell anybody. Hunter Biden doesn't have a business. Joe Biden has a business. It is Joe Biden's business. It wasn't Sammy the Bull Gravano's crime family. Nobody in their right mind would have referenced Sammy the Bull Gravano and his crime family. It was John Gotti's crime family, and Sammy the Bull Gravano worked for John Gotti. You know how we know that? We know that because Sammy the Bull Gravano had to pay John Gotti, not the other way around. Why do you think they were always talking about 10% for the big guy?
Mr. Bobulinski, who's the big guy?
Joe Biden.
Are you sure about that? Because when...
Joe Biden.
You're sure?
I'm 1,000% sure.
Because when Hunter Biden did his deposition under oath, he said, I don't know who it is, even though he was copied on an email that said, H will hold 10% for the big guy. You sure it's the big guy is Joe Biden?
1,000%. And there's other text messages that back that up, that the brave whistleblowers, Shapley and Ziegler, have produced, not from my phones, not from my BlackBerry that I took screenshots from. They took them from subpoenas directly from Apple's iCloud that back up the fact that Hunter knew the big guy was Joe Biden.
John Gotti didn't have to give 10% to Sammy the Bull Gravano. Sammy the Bull Gravano had to give 10% to John Gotti. Hunter Biden doesn't have a business. It's not Hunter Biden's business. It's not Jim Biden's business. They're employees. They're bagmen. Joe Biden has a business. Why? Joe Biden's the one with something to sell. And what does he have to sell? Let's make sure we focus on that for a moment before we get on to Tony Bobulinski destroying two of the biggest pieces of trash in Congress. Before we move on to that, let's just make sure we're clear about something. What is Joe Biden selling? No one likes to focus on that. What was Joe Biden selling? Or if they do focus on it, they'll use words like influence. He was selling influence. No. Influence is just a word. Joe Biden was selling your money. You understand that? You went to work today, or someone in your household went to work today, and the government swindled 25, 35% of their money, took it out of your paycheck. 25, 35% of your day was spent working for the federal government. And Joe Biden has spent his life as a senator, vice president, and I'm sure now president, figuring out how to take the money you earned today and hand it to other people so they will, in return, give him a cut back. He's not selling influence. He's selling taxpayer dollars. He's selling your dollars. That's what Joe Biden is selling. Hey, hire Hunter Biden here as vice president. I'll find a way. I'll get with Congress, and we'll find a way to slip a little of that American cash your way. I win. You win. Everybody wins. Just give me my 10%. Joe Biden has spent his career taking from you and giving it to foreigners to enrich himself. That's what Joe Biden has been selling. Don't ever forget that. Now sit back and enjoy watching Tony Bobulinski take a battle axe to Jamie Raskin and Dan Goldman.
We keep hearing from certain corners that our democracy is at risk and democracy is on the ballot in 24. Yet the same people preaching this mantra know better. They continue to lie directly to the American people without hesitation and remorse. Rep. Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies. Hunter Biden's defense attorney, Abby Lowell, weaponizes letters to Congress to try to smear my name.
Mr. Chairman, save his time, but he called members of this committee liars, and I just want to know whether the order and decorum requirements of House Rule 11 apply to witnesses appearing before the committee. Does it apply or does it not?
There's decorum from the members. We've asked for that. There's no language that I'm aware of pertaining to a witness.
Yeah. Thank you.
Make sure we didn't waste any of his time on the opening statement. Mr. Bobulinski, I'm sorry for the disruption. Please continue your opening statement.
Ouch. Like I said, this thing is personal today. And I applaud Tony Bobulinski for the courage that took. And let me just tell you, as you know, we live in an evil, corrupt country now. We do. Tony Bobulinski might want to say a prayer for that man. He's going to get a visit from the IRS or the FBI or maybe both on the exact same day. All right, and that wasn't the only entertaining thing that happened today. There was another exchange with AOC and Tony. But before we play that, I just want to remind everybody, because this is one of those little bits of information that's out there, and it's a fact, it's true, but it kind of gets lost in the ether with all the other crap we talk about on this show. AOC is an actress by trade. She's an actress and a dancer. You know that's what she is, right? So why is she in Congress? The Justice Democrats, it's a hardcore communist group of Democrats, they wanted to bounce a more moderate Democrat, and so they had actual auditions for people to come in who they could prop up to run against the moderate Democrat. AOC, the actress, showed up for an audition. They liked her look. Obviously, she's very pretty. And they thought, yeah, we could mold this person into a communist piece of trash in Congress. She won the audition, won the congressional race. Now she's in Congress. Why is AOC always making herself look dumb? It's not necessarily that she's dumb. She may be very, very dumb. She just doesn't know anything about politics at all. She's an actress. That's why you saw this today.
Is it your testimony today that you personally witnessed President Joe Biden commit a crime?
I believe the fact that he was sitting with me while I was putting together a
business deal. Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir? You specifically.
You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question. No. RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
Excuse
statutes.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse Farah. Me, sir. Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is the
It's a category
crime?
Of crimes that you're then charged
You
under
have charges.
A long hundred
You have charges. Yeah. Sir, please
you want me to
name
the exact statute
sir,
under RICO?
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18
All right, sir. I reclaim my
lawyers
time.
That went to law school.
Time. I
I'll
reclaim
leave it
my
up
time.
To you guys
okay,
to
thank
define
you,
the
sir.
Statute
I reclaim my time.
Anyway. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but that's our government, and I'm right. Let's talk some lawfare stuff. Peter Navarro, good man. He's no longer a free man, though. Julie Kelly is going to join us next and update us on all the lawfare goings on in the country right now. Before Julie joins us, let's talk about Lone Star Transfer, baby. Let's talk about your timeshare. This is a great day. You know why it's a great day? Not just because Tony Bobulinski humiliated a bunch of Democrats in Congress, but because today is the day you will be set free from that timeshare you don't want anymore. I know it's easy to feel foolish. You got the timeshare. Hopefully you enjoyed the timeshare. You probably didn't read the fine print. No one does. I never do. And you won it out. You found out you're stuck. They tell you you're stuck for life, didn't they? Now, they told you, oh, sorry, you signed the contract, but you're not stuck for life. Lone Star Transfer, it's the family business that gets people out. Over 18,000 timeshare owners legally and permanently have been set free from those annual fees, the special assessments, legally and permanently free from their timeshare. Call Lone Star Transfer. Let them do it for you today. 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
In the aftermath of a transformative election like the one we just had, it's hard to read the news without asking yourself every 5 seconds, how did we get here? That's exactly what we're always trying to figure out on Fiasco, a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which came down to a recount in Florida ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. In many ways, it's the beginning of the story we're living through right now. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore, and find out how a statistical tie in the Florida vote count put the nation into an unprecedented holding pattern, during which American voters waited with bated breath to find out whether Al Gore or George W. Bush would be the next president of the United States. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
They can put me in prison. They can put you in prison. Make no mistake about that. And make no mistake about this. They are coming after Donald Trump with the same tactics, tools, and strategies they used to put me over there today. I'm pissed. That's what I'm feeling right now. But I'm also afraid of only one thing. I'm afraid for this country, because this, what they're doing, should have a chilling effect on every American, regardless of their party. If they come for me, they can come for you.
He's not wrong there. Good man being sent off to prison. Let's find out why. Let's get to the bottom of all this stuff with Julie Kelly, of course. Make sure you have subscribed to her Substack. called Declassified, so you know all the lawfare insanity going on in this country. Julie, Peter Navarro, yet another name added to the very long list of political prisoners we have here in the United States of America. No matter how many people want to deny that fact, we do.
That's right. And what Peter Navarro said and what you just indicated, Jesse, and we've talked about for years, is they are coming after you, all of us. I mean, right now, the Department of Justice continues to arrest one J6er a day. They are on pace this year, Jesse, to arrest as many J6ers as they did the year after the events of January 6th. So to Peter Navarro's point, it's already happening. I mean, you had Joe Biden in January a few months ago brag that people who protested his election have so far been sentenced to 840 years in prison. And that number's already outdated. So Peter Navarro, unfortunately, is the latest political prisoner of this Department of Justice, of Obama and Democrat-appointed judge, his judge in this case, Amit Mehta. Democrat, all Democrat appellate court judges who refused to delay his reporting to prison as his case makes its way through the appellate court. And of course, a DC jury made up of almost all Democrats. And I believe their guilty verdict for his conviction of contempt of Congress came back within a matter of hours. Real serious deliberations happening there, DC jury pools.
Yeah, I'm sure they were agonizing over whether or not to send one of their political opponents to prison, as communists always do. Julie, I am curious about this because you do great reporting on all the people who keep getting arrested, the normal people who keep getting arrested. And this is still happening. So what did these people do? I guess I'm a little bit confused. You know, I'm on the side of all of them, but I'm a little bit confused. We're 3 years after the fact. Who are these people who are now getting rounded up? And why did it take so long? What?
Well, look, Jesse, the Department of Justice needs to keep the drip of January 6th in the news media, right? Because January 6th, as Joe Biden indicated, it was a feature of his campaign re-announcement ad. We know that the Democrats and Joe Biden were relying on January 6th to portray Donald Trump and all his supporters as domestic terrorists and a threat to democracy, whatever that means. And so, but thanks to people like you and others who cover my work or Darren Beatty or whoever it is, the January 6th narrative is not just collapsing, it is completely reversing. And now you have the DOJ, you have the January 6th Select Committee, you have these judges all in the crosshairs of the American people and even some members of Congress like Representative Barry Loudermilk, who is investigating the January 6th Select Committee. They never saw this coming, Jesse. They thought January 6th was done. No one would question this narrative. No one would dare to look at, the pipe bomber never was caught. The guys who built the gallows at 6 o'clock in the morning. So it fit just the Capitol dome in the little orange noose there. Those guys were never found. But yet now we can still arrest people. I believe her name is Isabella DeLuca, the young conservative influencer who was just arrested this week on low-level petty offenses. So they continue to do this to build up the caseload of alleged domestic terrorists and also to keep January 6th in the news as the American people are now starting to think, what really happened that day?
Yeah, so I'm glad they were able to take down that dangerous terrorist we see on the screen right there. She looks like quite the danger to society, I might point out. Okay, John Roberts, the Supreme Court. Julie, I don't need any help to hate John Roberts any more than I already do, but would you help me along anyway?
So I wish I could make sense of his ultimate decision that basically upheld Judge Amit Mehta and the appellate court judges, all Democrats as well, that forced Peter Navarro to report to prison as his appeal is making its way through the courts. Now, what John Roberts basically, I believe, said, I was trying to figure it out, is that he basically believes that Peter Navarro's appeal will fail, that it's not really a question of law, and so therefore his reporting to prison should not be delayed. Now, this is different than what's happening with Steve Bannon, also convicted by a DC jury of two counts of contempt of Congress. In that case, Carl Nichols, the Trump-appointed judge, did, which a lot of judges do, delay reporting to prison until the appeal decision comes down. Interestingly enough, and I'll tell you, this is another outrage for Peter Navarro, his appeal is supposed to be heard later this week instead of oral arguments, and another three all Democrat judge panel will consider his appeal. Usually oral arguments are made public. You can listen in. And this time they will not be conducting public oral or publicly accessible oral arguments at all. They will decide on the appeal without oral arguments, which means, of course, Peter Navarro's appeal will fail.
Okay, what happened with Trump in the Supreme Court? He filed some kind of a brief about immunity. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Is the ball moving in the right direction here?
So, Jesse, this is the appeal to the Supreme Court about lower court decisions. Again, almost all Democrat judges that denied Donald Trump's claims of presidential immunity from criminal prosecution in the January 6th criminal indictment. So this is now before the Supreme Court. They will hold oral arguments on this matter April 25th. In the meantime, both sides will file their briefs. Donald Trump yesterday filed his brief explaining why president should be immune from criminal prosecution. Then, of course, Jack Smith will come back and file an opposing brief. That will be what the Supreme Court justices will debate publicly on April 25th, and then will render some sort of decision or opinion. It could be as early as late May. It could be into June. And then, Jesse, the impact of that decision will gauge whether the January 6th trial in Washington moves forward or not. Of course, that is then indefinitely postponed until the Supreme Court comes down with this decisive ruling if a president is or is not immune from criminal prosecution. First time another history-making decision, court decision, among many when it relates to Donald Trump.
Julie, you've done a lot of good journalism over the years. Maybe my favorite thing you've done, though, is cover the bed-napping hoax of Michigan. So many Americans, most Americans, are really not aware of the fact that the federal government concocted, pretty much on its own, a fake kidnapping plot of the governor of Michigan to roll out some election year thing showing right-wingers to be dangerous terrorists. Anyway, what's the update on all this insanity?
You know, Jesse, I'm with you. I call the Whitmer Fednapping hoax my soap opera. It's kind of my break from my coverage of January 6th because you could not make this up. That the FBI was so brazen, and in some instances so stupid, but in other instances, and this is what I'm going to be reporting on shortly, all of these new recordings, of course, these FBI informants, they had over a dozen informants involved. They had at least three undercover agents involved. They have supervising handling agents from at least four or five other FBI field offices. They were all recording their targets. Well, almost all of that was a jury did not hear almost all of those recordings in trial, but somehow independent reporters have obtained these recordings and they are disclosing, confirming this plot. But even more details about the extent to which these informants, undercover agents, and their handling agents went to concoct this entrapment operation, lure these targets into it. And I'll tell you what, Jesse, really risked the life of Gretchen Whitmer, no matter what you think of her, risked her life and her family's life to try to put these men in a position of claiming to want to kidnap and kill her. And I will have their more disclosures I just heard yesterday on these recordings, underscoring the danger that the FBI really put Gretchen Whitmer and others in by concocting this plan to make it look like Donald Trump supporters tried to kidnap and kill governors like Gretchen Whitmer and Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, also part of that plot.
It's dangled her out there like a piece of greasy communist bait. It's crazy. Julie, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. All right. Debt, immigration. Those are the two things that can sink a nation of any size or strength. Debt and immigration. Both those things have done so many times throughout history, and we're going to talk about those things next. Now, leading up to the debt talk kind of leads us to this talk. We're not going to solve the national debt. People are getting more and more accepting of this now. We have sitting members of Congress saying this publicly now. The national debt crisis will not be solved. We are not going to change course until crisis gets here. Until the plane flies into the side of the mountain, nothing's going to stop it. The debt crisis is inevitable. So take steps to prepare. Doesn't do any good to sit around and suck your thumb. Call Oxford Gold Group and prepare. You don't have to go crazy. Look, you don't have the money to go crazy. Who does? Get some gold or silver coins in your physical possession. Not gold bars. You don't need a bank vault. Oxford Gold Group will mail it to your front door. Anonymous, insured. They'll get it in your 401k. They'll get it in your IRA. The debt crisis is coming. It is coming. All we can do is get a parachute, right? 833-995-GOLD. Tell Oxford Jesse told you to call. 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
In the aftermath of a transformative election like the one we just had, it's hard to read the news without asking yourself every 5 seconds, how did we get here? That's exactly what we're always trying to figure out on Fiasco, a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which came down to a recount in Florida and ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. In many ways, it's the beginning of the story we're living through right now. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore, and find out how a statistical tie in the Florida vote count put the nation into an unprecedented holding pattern, during which American voters waited with bated breath to find out whether Al Gore or George W. Bush would be the next president of the United States. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, we're going to make this fast because it's a little dark, but it's one of those things we have to continue discussing on the show because we have to start getting our minds right in order to pressure our representatives to get their minds right. Debt and immigration. Those are the two things that can bring and will bring nations down no matter what size. No matter what size. You know, there's no army on the planet that could attack the United States of America and take us down right now. It's not possible. We have too many guns, too many boats, too many everything. It's just not possible. Logistically, it's not possible. But American debt and illegal immigration can. And I've described it this way before. It's the best way I can think of to describe it. I want you to picture the biggest, most powerful ship you've ever seen in your life. This is the biggest, most powerful thing you've ever seen in your life. It's awesome. It can take a lot of punishment. But what it can't do is take on unending amounts of water. Eventually, with enough water, even the biggest, most powerful ship goes down. That's what debt and immigration are. Let's talk about immigration. First, we have a squabble with the courts. Texas is out there trying to secure its border because the federal government won't. Texas is getting mixed signals, if you will, from the various courts. First, they're allowed to enforce the law. Then they're not allowed to enforce the law. Then the Supreme Court makes a decision. Then they reverse the decision. Now today, a judge decided out of the blue that they're not allowed to do it. Just understand something. We now live in a country. I can't believe this is the case. We now live in a country where states have to ask the courts for permission to secure their borders. That's how crazy things are. Haiti, a fallen country, is getting ready to flood the country with all kinds of criminals. And you know we're going to let them in. The last time 14,000 Haitians showed up on the border, we let them all in. It's crazy. And yes, I am glad we do have people out there like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis who says he's sending them to Martha's Vineyard.
The problem when you get to a situation like Florida is if they have people in our state and we wanted to fly them, say, back to Haiti, you have to get clearance to be able to do that. If you wanted to fly somebody to a South American country, wherever they're from, it becomes a little bit more difficult because the federal government's going to tell the host countries not to accept our planes. So we've gone through these iterations. What could we do as states? I definitely think we can help put them back over the border if they come across in Texas or Arizona. And so I'd be willing to help do that. I think that the states really have no other choice to do that at that point. It's a little bit different for a maritime state like us. That's why we really have to get them before they reach the shores. And that's why we're working so hard to do that.
Yeah.
Although I will say this, we do have our transport program also that's gonna be operational. So Haitians land in the Florida Keys, their next stop very well may be Martha's Vineyard.
I love it. All right, so we're moving on past that. I just want to address this because the House is going through all these spending bills right now, and we got this gem yesterday from Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. An agreement has been reached for the DHS appropriations, which will allow completion of the FY24 appropriations process. House and Senate committees have begun drafting bill text to be prepared for release and consideration by the full House and Senate as soon as possible. So they've already come to an agreement on spending, but they don't have the text yet? Hold on, let me make sure I have that right. So Mike Johnson and Chuck Schumer, and by the way, Biden already said he's going to sign this thing into law. They all got together and they came to an agreement on something that hasn't been written yet? You want to talk about just nakedly laying the corruption right out there for you? Ah, wait. Now you understand what I mean about the debt crisis that's coming. It's coming. Financial crisis. It can't be stopped. Joining me next to talk about the Fed and the debt and all that stuff, I'm going to ask Peter about this. Peter St. Ange is going to join us next to rant about that. Just remember, these people have absolutely doomed us. And the American people not caring about spending kind of are at fault here. Now, speaking of all the illegal immigration coming into the country, all the criminals, all the murders, all the rapists, every day there's a new headline about an American citizen being preyed upon by a criminal. What have you done to protect yourself? I'm not talking about picking up the cell phone to call the cops. If you're walking in the parking lot in the gas station tonight and a very violent man shows up in front of you to hurt you, can you stop him? Do you have your Byrna pistol launcher yet? Because if you do, you can pull it out and stop him. Don't, Jesse, I'm not comfortable. Listen, this is non-lethal. I carry lethal and non-lethal. In fact, I would recommend everyone who carries concealed to also carry non-lethal. But no matter what, you need to carry a Byrna pistol launcher on you. It's legal in all 50 states. No background checks. They'll mail it to your front door. It shoots these pepper balls or tear gas balls. Are you sure your daughter can stop somebody from hurting her? Your son? Byrna. B-Y-R-N-A. And when you go to Byrna.com/Jesse, you get 10% off. Get a few Byrna pistol launchers for the family. Trust me, you might even have fun practicing with it. All right? All right, we'll be back.
In the aftermath of a transformative election like the one we just had, it's hard to read the news without asking yourself every 5 seconds, how did we get here? That's exactly what we're always trying to figure out on Fiasco, a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which came down to a recount in Florida and ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. In many ways, it's the beginning of the story we're living through right now. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore, and find out how a statistical tie in the Florida vote count put the nation into an unprecedented holding pattern, during which American voters waited with bated breath find out whether Al Gore or George W. Bush would be the next president of the United States. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, so the Fed is confusing for normal people. That's why we need smart people to come on the show to explain things for us. Jerome Powell spoke today. I don't understand. Why aren't we cutting rates? Anyway, joining me now, Peter St. Ange of the amazing Heritage Foundation. He's an economist. Okay, Peter, why aren't they cutting rates? Rates are really high and it hurts and people can't get home loans and it's hurting the economy. What's going on?
It is. All of those things are true. Interest rates are at a level right now where they're squeezing regular people. So you've got mortgages up around 7%. You've got all these problems, high rates hit the banks. That's why we had a bunch of bank collapses last year. They're also bad for companies. There's this wall of corporate debt coming in. There's this wall of real estate, commercial real estate loans. So high rates are a serious problem. The issue here is that the Fed knows that if it cuts rates again, that is going to make inflation go higher. The background here is that right now, inflation is taking off, right? So if we go back to the last 5 months, so last October, inflation was bumping along at an annualized 1%. Okay, so it went up to 1.9 in November, 2.8 December, 3.5 in January. Latest number is February. Last month, it was 5.4% annualized. So inflation is absolutely taking off. The Fed is now stuck. They're in a spot where they've got to keep rates high to at least try to keep a lid on that. And then they just keep shooting $1 trillion at anything that goes wrong. So they already shot a bunch of money at the banks. They shoot it at Wall Street. Anything they can find, they just launch $1 trillion at that. Of course, every trillion they print that way is going to lead to future inflation. So the Fed has screwed up so far. It looks like they pulled off the catastrophe they ran in the 1970s, where they launched this massive inflation, hiked rates to break the economy. And even then, it ripped off again. In the 70s, it went on for another 5 years after that of high inflation. So we'll see if they manage that one again.
Peter, can you explain to people like me why 2% annualized inflation is the target? Because these people, these smart people, talk about it all the time, that that's what they're going for. But for the average person like me, I don't understand why my money needs to inflate at all, let alone 2%. How did we get to this number?
Yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, they got the smoke and mirrors on it, but fundamentally, there is no science behind any of this crap. It's fundamentally public relations propaganda. The Fed's job, the reason why central banks exist, including the Fed, is to print money, to create inflation. All right, before the Fed existed in this country, we had about 150 years with no inflation. Inflation is not built into the economy. It's not a fact of life. It is created by central banks. So why does the Fed have a 2% target? Because it thinks that's the most it can steal. Right, my favorite metaphor is a gasoline thief. All right, let's say you're going and stealing some gas out of all your neighbors' cars every night. All right, the trick to that game is don't take too much at once. They're going to notice. It's exactly how central banks operate. So they stick to 2% because they think they can get away with it. Some random banker came up with it in New Zealand 30 years ago. There's no science. There's no logic to it. And in fact, there's a bunch of Democrat inflationists who want to crank that up. So they want to get it to 3, 4, whatever they can get away with. Of course, at that point, the people start getting upset. They start voting for populists.
Yeah. Okay, Peter, I want to circle back to something you talked about the commercial real estate loan industry. I remember during COVID, the lockdowns, I had to go to New York City for some stupid media thing, but I had to go to this office building, and it was something like 50 stories. And Peter, 3 stories were in use. Everything else was empty, and they were emptying out. I have been told that places like New York City now, speaking of which, they're at 50% occupancy for all of its corporate stuff. Is that what's driving this corporate loan crisis? The fact that these people who own these commercial properties, no one wants to rent them anymore.
Yeah, you always get commercial real estate going through this kind of boom bust cycle. And usually that's driven by the Fed, right? So what the Fed typically does is lower rates, interest rates. They lower it to make money cheap. All right. And then that you kind of get this tissue fire in the economy. You know, you get all these stupid like .com and crypto and all this crap. Just basically money is so cheap that idiots are getting it. And they're playing around with it. And then the Fed usually hikes interest rates real high because it's got to stop the inflation it caused with all that cheap money. All right. So you get that boom bust cycle. Now, in that, commercial real estate is always hit really hard, right? There's a lot of idiots in commercial real estate. There's very big numbers in play. You got hundreds of millions for an individual property. So they get this flood of money. You get this big tissue fire in commercial real estate. And then when the Fed hikes rates, it comes crashing down. So that's a normal cycle. That's kind of how this launched. The problem with this particular one, the reason why it's such a problem, is exactly what you're talking about with COVID. It's not just COVID, the kind of work from home that a lot of companies went to permanently. You've also got this intentional mismanagement of America's cities where, I mean, they're turning into these like apocalyptic hellscapes. You know, downtown San Francisco, I mean, you had to sell your firstborn to get office space on Market Street in San Francisco, right? And now it's all taken over by junkies. So all of those properties, every single one of those properties that's covered in junkies now, somebody took out like a $300 million loan for that sucker. It's sitting on some bank's books. Ooh. All right. And right now what the banks are doing is they give them new money to service the loan so everybody can pretend that the loan is healthy. All right. Because once the loan is no longer being serviced, that's a big red mark on their book. And then the regulators have to come in and they have uncomfortable conversations. So there was actually a study. It went up in the NBER recently. They were saying that there could be 400 regional banks in the U.S. under threat because of that collapse in commercial real estate.
Oh, I'm so unbelievably uncomfortable right now. Just the thought of a $300 million loan and a property. Oh my gosh. Okay, Peter, I want to finish up with this, the housing market, because that is more, it's more applicable to everybody watching right now. Yeah. It's just, it's a very sad fact of life. Many Americans, more Americans than any time in my lifetime, cannot buy a home right now. Why can't normal people afford a home anymore?
Yeah, well, the price has skyrocketed. Again, thanks to the Fed. So the Fed pumped out the easy money, home prices went up. And then when the Fed tried to, you know, hide what it dumped on the living room carpet, it jacked rates up. So now mortgages go up. If prices go up and mortgages go up, more like it becomes out of reach for regular people to get a house. So right now, if you want to qualify for the median house, we're not talking a mansion, the median house, you got to make $100,000 a year, right? And your monthly payment on a new mortgage is going to be close to $3,000. That's like half of household income. The median family. So houses are absolutely out of reach. And what we're seeing now is young people, they are completely giving up, right? People in their 20s, it used to be that's when you're going to build up for your house, you're going to start a family, you're going to start building a future, your, you know, financial foundation. No, they're giving up. They go out, they take a cruise to the Bahamas, they don't bother getting married, they're not going to have kids. Why? Because this is all out of reach. So for the first time, we got kids, they grew up in a house that their parents owned, all right? And they, you know, they're like 40 years old eating ramen with the roommates now. That is a lifestyle that is unimaginable to them at this point. And I think it's just going to keep getting worse. You know, the pressures between the house prices, the rates are going to stay high now. We just had a Fed meeting today. They said they're going to keep it higher for longer. So those mortgage rates are going to stay up. And then, you know, you got these other things jumping in, like home insurance is so high now. You got about 20 million Americans who are actually going without insurance. All these costs are slamming the door closed to people buying a house. That means they're going to be renters forever. If you're a renter forever, you are building nothing. You are not building a retirement. You're not building the basis for a family.
Oh, I just see my father stressing at the thought of renting for life. He would just scream at me. Peter, you are the best. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. That was a lot, but man, Peter's the best. All right, we have Light in the Mood.
In the aftermath of a transformative election like the one we just had, it's hard to read the news without asking yourself every 5 seconds, how did we get here? That's exactly what we're always trying to figure out on Fiasco, a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which came down to a recount in Florida and ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. In many ways, it's the beginning of the story we're living through right now. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore, and find out how a statistical tie in the Florida vote count put the nation into an unprecedented holding pattern, during which American voters waited with bated breath to find out whether Al Gore or George W. Bush would be the next president of the United States. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, I used to work construction. I grew up in a construction family. My dad did construction. His dad before him did construction. I remember when I was a kid, my dad, when he was feeling nice, he'd let me get up on the backhoes and the excavators, and I'd get to work the machines. It was the greatest thing in the world. And construction's good work. It's honest work. Pays well, too. And the only thing is, I never had anybody cheering me on. It'd make the day go by better. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
It's hard to read the news these days without asking yourself, how did we get here? Fiasco is a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which resulted in a high-stakes stalemate, ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.